Hi, this is Savio. I've been seeking answers to some of life's most perplexing questions my entire life. In 2014, I was diagnosed with stage 3 cancer. And ever since, I realized my calling existed outside of what I knew to be familiar. This podcast is home for survivors like myself and those who yearn to build resilience in their mindset and live their best life. In season 3, the show includes a mix of coaching sessions followed by interviews with those from all walks of life who have been successful in the wellness, business, media, and travel industries. The intent is to show the human experience in its rawest form so that others may glean insight. Nothing is rehearsed. As a board-certified wellness coach, number one best-selling author, and syndicated columnist, my job is to ask the deep questions of those trying to make sense of their place in this fractured world. I believe life speaks to us in different ways. Many of us listen, but don't know how or where to begin. As someone who has crossed the bridge between life and death, I say simply, begin where you are now and get busy living. If you like today's episode, I would appreciate it if you could share it. Be sure to tag me at The Human Resolve so I can reciprocate in kind. So without further ado, welcome to The Human Resolve Podcast. Today's podcast guest on resilience is Beth Lauren, founder of WellTech World Summit, Ayurveda counselor, and sexual assault survivor. As Beth states, I was in the film industry for years where like for every yes, it's like 5,000 no's. And that's true whether you're producing or writing or acting or whatever it is. I think probably the most successful people can tell you they had years of rejection. Please note, the WellTech World Summit has been rescheduled to take place in Brighton, United Kingdom in March of 2023.
Oh, great to be here with you. So I am many things, like many people in this multitasking world. I'm an Ayurveda wellness counselor. Ayurveda is literally translates to life science. And it's a 5,000-year-old, some people say 3,000-year-old, Indian modality that really works with the mind, body, and spirit for optimal health. And so I do nutritional counseling and menu planning, and I cook for some people. So I do that. I wrote a memoir about a horrible experience in my life and coming back from that, which was dealing with PTSD. I'm a sexual assault survivor, and you and I have talked about that. So I'm an author, and I'm also producing an exciting event, which will bring together the ecosystems of wellness and tech in Dublin in March 21st to the 23rd, and it's called the WellTech World Summit. And so please go to WellTechWorldSummit.com for information and how to buy tickets.
Wonderful, Beth. So I sort of contacted you, or we were sort of put together through you collaborating with my interview series with Authority called Rising Through Resilience, How to Be Resilient During Turbulent Times. You know, I really found it fascinating because you mentioned this idea of cultivating a meditation practice. And for someone like myself, who's been meditating for now almost 2 decades, it started off with a couple minutes a day to now 20 minutes religiously. I can honestly say if I don't do it, I'm completely off my game.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree. I do transcendental meditation. So it's twice a day. So it's like a 40-minute commitment for the day, which can be daunting, especially when you get caught up in the middle of the day. But if I don't do the second one, I'm very, very, very good. The first one, when I wake up first thing in the morning, but sometimes I miss the second one and it really throws me off. The benefits that I've had in the last year through dedicating myself to TM have been enormous in terms of really fully processing PTSD. And I actually was gifted from the David Lynch Foundation, let me give them a little plug, a scholarship to learn TM as an assault survivor. So they work with a lot of people who have dealt with domestic violence, sexual violence, soldiers. Who have high incidence of PTSD. So it's a wonderful, wonderful organization and cannot recommend TM more.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the article you mentioned, you know, your experience in the film industry and how, you know, stressful and time consuming and taxing that was. Were you meditating during that time or?
So I was doing kind of ad hoc. Like I always knew that I've always been interested in Eastern medicine and Eastern philosophies, and I knew it was good for me, but in like abstract kind of concept, not in a dedicated practice. So I would do it kind of here and there to try to calm myself, but I didn't really, I guess I'm late to the game because I didn't really adopt like a dedicated practice until about 2 years ago.
What have you found to be the most beneficial aspects of both TM and Ayurvedic medicine?
So I think it's really understanding how connected like our brains and our bodies like 100% are, and how much everything we think and feel influences what happens in our body. And I think that a lot of the way that we're brought up and the doctors that we go to, like, I think they're finally learning that connection, because we've always kind of taught and we were treated like they're separate entities. And so we don't really get to root causes. We just deal with symptoms. So I think getting in touch with my body through meditation and through Ayurveda has really made the difference in how I approach my health and how I give advice to people on how to handle their issues.
So how do you define resilience?
So it's really just being able to see the forest through the trees, like knowing whatever you're dealing with, you're going to come out on the other side. For me, it's because I've been in some really, really incredibly horrifying and difficult situations. And I'm here now. And I'm enjoying really, really good mental and physical health, even though putting on this event is making me completely insane. I think it's really just knowing that there's a way to keep going, keep pushing through, that everything's really transitory. You know, that's kind of a Buddhist tenet. And not that I am a practicing Buddhist, but it is a really important lesson to learn that really charged, highly stressful, desperate moments, it'll change. You know, not right away, maybe not that day, but that it will change and things will become less charged. And learning these modalities and doing these practices will help, you know, like lessen how heightened the emotions are. So that's really what it is. And just remembering how strong you are, and that you have support system and that you have people to turn to. And honestly, like right now, like even if you don't have people in your immediate circle, there's so many ways to reach out to people. There's so many apps and online therapy and different ways to get the help that you need, or have someone at least to speak to let you know that you're worthwhile, you're worth it, you can keep moving ahead.
Yeah. No, also in the article too, you mentioned about when life knocks you down. And then also I found extremely intriguing sort of this aspect of when you let yourself down. Can you sort of further elaborate?
Yeah, I think no one is harder on me than me. And so, you know, even when, you know, the times I was writing about when, you know, we owed money on the film and we were swindled and we couldn't pay bills and we had contracts and people, you know, it was a difficult time. Wow. Like no one was harder. No one felt the brunt of it, even though, you know, I wasn't responsible for what happened, although I made a few bad choices. No one could be meaner to me or harder than me. And I think, you know, that's a really important lesson. And like, we have to please ourselves and take care of ourselves and stop being so mean to ourselves, because there's a lot of truth in, you know, what you tell yourself is what the outcome is. You know, if you tell yourself you're meaningless and worthless and you're never going to get anywhere, that's pretty much what you get. And that's a hard lesson to learn.
Yeah, I can definitely agree. I mean, I'm a cancer survivor, and I remember even to this day, my extended family still doesn't know I had cancer 7 years ago, because I looked at it as like a shameful thing that I kind of to some degree brought it on myself, or that I wasn't healthy enough to not have it, and all these crazy machinations running through my mind. But you're right, though. It's really about being kind to yourself and gentle. And I know that's like an easy thing, but it's
really hard.
And no, but like to actually say it sounds easy, but to actually practice it is a whole different ball game. And you know, in the article too, I sort of mentioned sort of this difference between resilience and courage. How do you define the two?
Yeah. So I love that question, actually. I think, what I said and how I really look at it is that courage is like a moment to moment thing. Mm. You could be courageous in, you know, one particular moment or one aspect of your life, like courageously tell someone you love them romantically who you think might not return the favor, you know, like I've been there. And so, you know, that takes a certain amount of courage, or, you know, to move to a foreign country and start a business and different, you know, all different aspects. But then, you know, that's a like an aspect of your life. Doesn't mean that you're living with courage every day. But I think resilience is a way that you choose to live your life. And it's deciding that whatever happens, whether that person doesn't return the favor, whether your business goes bust, whether, you know, you're making mistakes in you know, the way, in life choices, or where you move or where you live or whatever, that you know you're going to get through it, and you're just going to keep moving, move on to the next person, the next job, the next business, and that you're going to keep going. So I think that's really like an ethical choice to make for yourself of how you're going to live your life.
Yeah. I also know you mentioned your work with Afghan women, and I'm like, how does Beth have time for all this? I mean, what have you sort of discovered in that process of working and yeah. helping?
So just to be clear, I don't work directly with Afghan women. I'm not on the ground in Afghanistan, and kudos to the people who are. So I work as a fundraising consultant to Women for Afghan Women, which womenforafghanwomen.org. Please make a donation. I'll just plug that as well. Amazing organization that's going into its 21st year. And they do programs in Afghanistan on the ground. There's children's services and domestic violence services and educational services. And some of it is a little bit on hiatus right now as Taliban is in power, and there's a few challenges right now. But in this country, there are a huge refugee population. And since August, since the change in regime, there's been an influx of more Afghans, and they do amazing work. They do literacy programs, you know, ESL, they provide temporary housing, food, shelter, hygiene products, get people jobs, help people who are in domestic violence situations to get them to safety. So 20 years of doing that in the US, and through the immense generosity of people since August, we've been able to open another center in Virginia, wow. which is happening now. So I work with that organization. I'm helping them build an endowment fund so that they have peace of mind and financial stability for the long run. The people are dedicated and beautiful and really incredible. It's a really small team and really nimble, and they are very resilient. Very challenging time because we had so many staff members who are still in Afghanistan and some who have relocated to Germany. We're in the process of relocating some people, hopefully to Ireland. We hope that's going to happen. And just people are in Canada. So it's a process. It's a real humanitarian crisis right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I have a lot of my guest sort of coin a superpower of theirs. And you and I agree that it was grace under fire. And I really loved in the article when you said, if someone says no to a project, it makes you work even harder. Like, has that been a theme throughout most of your life?
Yeah, because I've chosen fields in my life. You know, I was in the film industry for years where, like, for every yes, it's like 5,000 no's. And that's true whether you're producing or writing or acting or whatever it is. I think even the most successful people, and probably the most successful people, can tell you they had years of rejection. So I, you know, if you're going to let that beat you down, you need to not be in jobs where you're rejected on a daily basis. And I think that no, David Meltzer, who's a coach and a, you know, sports agent and just a genuine, amazing ray of sunshine. He's a keynote speaker at my events. He always says that, like, those no's, that's one step closer to the yes. So, you know, and I kind of live by those words that, you know, it's, I am one step closer to yes every time I get a no. Like, I could just, you know, cross those people off and keep moving ahead. If you're producing an event where you have to get people to agree to sponsor it, to speak at it, to, you know, to attend, you're constantly having to be moving ahead and just let the no roll off your back.
Yeah, it also speaks further to that, you know, this idea that you mentioned about the tenacity is like a way to cultivate resiliency. I just found that so visually beautiful, this idea of tenacity and sort of like really that quote about never, 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 never giving up. How do you see that with what everyone's going through right now in the world?
Oh, well, thank you. I was in the lowest depths of life. Like it'll be a decade. It's like, it is a decade ago this time. This time of year actually is right around the Super Bowl when we found out that we had been swindled on the film and that we were working on, that I worked on for 7 years, that had amazing attachments, incredible actors, award-winning composer, amazing sales agent. Like it was just incredible. And, you know, we lost money, people's money was stolen. The money I was counting on for my fees, you know, director, writer, producer, evaporated overnight. Money my family put in, money I put in, like it was just, I was literally penniless and without my project. And so that really triggered PTSD for me. And so I was at the depths of despair. So I know what it's like to come back from that. And I look at how much has happened in my life in the decade. My life is imperfect. There's, you know, there's still residual debt situations like from that event. There's still money I'll never see again. There's, you know, there's always, you know, challenges when you're a survivor that you're always dealing with. But the people and the experiences that have made my life so rich and so meaningful, and the way that I've been able to pivot, the career that I've had now, and this event and meeting people like you who, you know, on this journey has really shown me, like, you know, being tenacious for your life and being an advocate for your life is really, really the most important thing.
What's a step you think in the right direction to cultivate that tenacity? Because I think it's easy to say, very hard to do.
I completely agree. I think really the number one thing that pops into my head is really cultivating self-love. And I know that sounds like a little like airy-fairy, but it's really true, because everything, the things that we just spoke about blaming ourselves, the way you blamed yourself for having cancer, I think that's a little bit of self-hatred or self, you know, like it's because obviously you're not responsible for that. And, you know, for me, like I blamed myself for things that were out of my control. And even when it's been my bad decision, it's like, you know, hating myself is the root cause of the bad decisions that I made and bad people I let into my life because I really didn't listen to my intuition and I just was not really checking in with myself. So I think that's the number one step. You've got to love this person, because at the end of the day, whether you have a spouse, partner, children, whatever, it's just you. Like you start with you. You came in alone, you're going out alone. And you don't know how your, you know, family dynamic or your friends are gonna change. So you have to be happy with it within yourself.
Yeah. So Beth, what are your five keys for someone to be more resilient?
So I think, you know, things we've touched on, I think cultivating a meditation practice is really important. I think it really helps you to know yourself and quiet your mind. I think exercise, like it doesn't have to be huge. You don't have to do an hour in the gym every day. You know, getting out, taking a walk and fresh air is really important. Eating really healthy food, like really looking at what you're eating. Try not to eat things in a package. Try to cook for yourself, because not only is it a healthier experience, but it's really enjoyable. Even if people don't, it helps you to like take time and like meditation, like calm down and relax, and you can like create this beautiful thing that you can share a meal with someone else.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I have to interject, because I actually was like, during COVID, the height of COVID, I'm like, you know what? I can't go to my favorite restaurants in New York City. So I'm just going to try to replicate the gourmet dishes. So I got a smart oven stove, and I like went crazy, and I took pictures of it because I was like, this is so amazing that I could do this.
So, I love it. Yeah, it's like you feel so proud, and when someone, there's such pride when you share a meal that you've cooked and you can, and someone enjoys it and loves it. Like, because cooking, you know, it's cliche, but it's true. Cooking is love. and you know when you're excited about it and you get good reviews from people, you know, even the ones who aren't eating it, even when you post it, people are like, looks delicious. Yes. You know, that's meaningful. So I think also volunteering is big. Like many, many people during COVID, you know, I volunteered at a local food bank that just sprung up to like help feed people in my neighborhood and the surrounding neighborhoods in Brooklyn. And, you know, it was one Friday a month for a couple of weeks and just, you know, handing out food and cleaning up and just being there for, you know, extra hands. Like, it just takes you out of yourself and it helps to remind you that no matter what you're going through, other people are going through a really tough time too. And during COVID, people who had so much, you know, they lost their jobs overnight, you know, or, you know, they were sick overnight, really desperately sick. And so volunteering can really, really help you to cultivate resilience and really realize how there's community, like, you know, in everything that's going on.
Yeah. I think the last piece of it was remembering how far you've come. I love that because the savoring aspect or the remembering aspect is something that feels fleeting to most people.
Yeah, 100%. I have moments when I think back to times in 2012 when things were really tough for me, and they'll just kind of pop into my head. And I think my brain is trying to remind me all how far I have come, because there are some really, really desperate moments when, you know, when people, you know, I was suicidal and at that time, and people, you know, it's not wanting to die. It's just, you know, the pain being bigger than the ability to cope. And I was in that place. And I think my brain wants to remind me that I'm never going back there, that no matter what's tough right now, you know, trying to put together a 3-day event in another country remotely is nothing, no matter what shows up at my door, you know, whether it's illness or, you know, financial or whatever it is, relationship drama, like it's never going to, I've come so far, it's never going to be that bad again. My coping mechanism is working very well.
Yeah, it actually reminds me of, so a friend of mine on Instagram posted something on January 1st, and he was like, I'm going to write 50 biggest wins for 2020 so that my parents don't bug me about getting married or having a baby, whatever. And I was like, oh, let me try that. And I was surprised that I got about 53. And I realized, the biggest wins weren't things that maybe other people would think as big, but for me, they were big because they made me feel good that I did them. But it was such a great exercise. And I really thanked him for even, you know, suggesting that.
I love that, because you got to celebrate the things that you do. Like, because I think that we're kind of programmed to be like, oh yeah, that was a win, and then just file it away. But the things that are losses, we magnify 1,000 times, and we kind of like, we obsess about those. Yeah. And like, oh, that's no way to live. No, but it's hard. It's hard because we're very like goal-centric kind of culture. And then there's the whole idea of like what other people consider a win. So my little wins, your little wins every day are not someone else's. And that again speaks to self-love. Like, you only have to please yourself. So feel good about those wins.
Yeah. And he wasn't posting his wins. He just posted the title, 50 biggest wins of 2020. And I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. So it was great. So now for this portion, I want to go into our brainstorming, as I call it. And what I really found fascinating is sort of this idea that you had about creating a movement around the platform of survivors speaking about sexual assault or domestic violence, and how maybe we can move that conversation forward. I would love to sort of brainstorm.
Yeah. So there were really no, so I was abducted and sexually assaulted when I was 12.
Wow.
I'm 55. So it was 1978. So there's virtually no services, you know, they collect materials, you know, just, you know, your clothing and things for a rape kit. That's it. They don't immediately, you know, police department, no counseling was offered. There was really not a lot of counseling available. When I was an adult and I started to have PTSD many decades later, there was nothing available for me as someone who had PTSD that wasn't related to like combat or having recently been sexually assaulted. Yeah, there were a lot of support groups for recently sexually assaulted people or people of a certain age group or people who were survivors who had been sexually assaulted as children, like incest or long-term, but not rape survivors. So that's how specific. And I live in New York City, which is like, you know, therapy capital of America. And so it was really, really, really frustrating. And I actually got misdiagnosed and had some therapy that wasn't the correct therapy for me. So, you know, there are a few platforms now. There's actually a platform called Lita Health, where they're trying to create exactly that, safe spaces and creating circles where people can go in and talk, and not just talk, but use yoga and meditation and different modalities to help them in their process. So I just would love a platform where there was more of that, and that you could, you know, everyone's experience as a survivor is unique, but it's also the same, because a lot of what we share, you know, feelings of shame, issues around sex and feeling comfortable, like we share, there's a lot of overlap. So I'd love a platform where like me as a 55-year-old woman could sit and talk to a 13-year-old girl or a young boy or who, you know, like that we all could share. And there, it seems to be very siloed.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that note as well. And what really I gravitated towards in the article was my love of Marianne Williamson as well. I her book Return to Love changed my life back in the day. And I was thinking about what the Course in Miracles would say about a situation like this and how it could be reframed, or how it could, how the conversation could be moved in a way where, like you said, it could be less siloed and more inclusive. And the thing that comes to mind is sort of this aspect of, so, creating conversations not around maybe the trauma, so to speak, but what the trauma has taught you, or what the vision could be or would be for you if you was to, let's say, get past the trauma or at least lessen the severity of the trauma. That's the only thing that sort of pops into my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's beautiful. And, you know, I think Marianne Williamson, she's all about the love. And I think that's number one, like to know, you just feel so completely rejected because you've had this awful thing happen to you and no one knows really how to deal with it. And, you know, people, it's the only crime where people question the victim, like suspiciously. Like if you report that you've been mugged or your house has been broken into or someone pulled a gun on you or the list goes on, no one questions that. They take you at face value. But when you say you've been assaulted, you're immediately on the defensive, you know, the typical, what were you wearing? Why were you out late? Why didn't you, my personal fave, why didn't you report this when it happened? You know, it's like, you've answered your own question. This is why people don't report, because of questions like that. Yeah. And so, you know, if people had more compassion and love for people going through that kind of trauma and understood that it's not linear, the journey, once you've been assaulted. So yeah, I agree 100%. And Marianne Williamson is just, she's just one of the brightest, smartest people. And it really upset me during when she ran for president and people like really like were so mean and so critical, as though she couldn't have a thought in her head. And she understands the way government works, and she understands the way government spends money better than probably 50% of the people who are running in that pack. So yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, and she's recently on TikTok, because I was like scrolling, and a couple of days ago she appeared. I'm like, Marianne's on TikTok. Like, what's going on? So it's actually really, really cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, yeah. Beth, where can my audience listeners find out more about you and the WellTech Summit?
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. So please go to WellTechWorldSummit.com and you'll get all information. We have incredible, incredible thought leaders in mental health and social justice and tech and wellness, at Ayurveda, yoga. Come to Dublin. Restrictions are lifted. It's wide open for business. Great town. And if you can't come to Dublin, there's a virtual ticket option. Virtual tickets go, actually, by the time you hear this, virtual tickets will be on sale. And so you can watch, you can join us. We have amazing people. David Meltzer and Cindy Gallup are our keynote speakers. And so you could learn more about that. You can also, if you're interested in Ayurveda and doing a little consult, I can do free 15 minutes with you and free profile of your dosha, and go to my website to learn what that is, at sanghanyc.com, which is sanghanyc.com. So thank
Beth,
you.
Thank you so much. I so enjoyed this. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
It was so my pleasure. It was great to do the interview with you and great to see you here today. And thank you so much, Savio.
Sure. Absolutely. I really hope you enjoyed listening to today's podcast episode of The Human Resolve. If you feel that others may enjoy this episode as well, please share socially at The Human Resolve. You can also visit my website, thehumanresolve.com, where I offer one-on-one coaching sessions, a subscription to my weekly newsletter, where I probe into the secrets from living smarter to feeding your three brains, and my author website, isurvivedcancer.co, where you can purchase my number one best-selling book, I Survived Cancer and Here Is How I Did It. 35 cancer survivors share their journey and view the book trailer, including excerpts from the book. If you could also help me out and give me a review and rating on this podcast platform, because I do care what you have to say, I would really appreciate it. Now, get out there, my friends, and get busy living.